Welcome to Gemara Markings. Today's shiur is Nedarim Daf Yud Beis. Don't forget to click on the Daf option in order to view a specially marked Daf Gemara for today's shiur. If you are not fully familiar with our Gemara marking system and wish to benefit from its great rewards, it is essential that you study all of the introductory material accessed by clicking on the Learn the System option provided on the sidebar of our homepage and then go to option 2. If you are already partially familiar, you will benefit by clicking on the brief 4-minute introduction that is available here. Being that our system is a visual approach to the Daf Gemara, it is recommended that you print out the marked Daf Gemara before the shiur. If you wish to be in touch with us, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. Today's shiur begins at the bottom line of Daf Yud Aleph Omid Beis. During our last shiur, we opened the sugya with a question that involved one who formulates a vow and compares the item that he might be interested in prohibiting to something that was made forbidden through sanctification. As is the standard case when you sanctify a korban and you compare something to it, so that item also becomes prohibited. However, we focused on a case of shlomim meat that was lying next to some permitted meat. And you said ze kozeh. The shlomim meat, the sacrificial meat, was meat that had experienced the zrikas hadam, the sprinkling of the blood on the altar, which enables the meat to be eaten. By saying ze kozeh, what is your intent? Is your intent to compare the new item, the permitted item, to the shlomim meat in its current at its current state, or at its pre-permitted state, the pre-sprinkling state? In simpler terms, using the Hebrew, bikoroi kamathis o beheteru kamathis. We continue with the Gemara. Before we go into the text itself, you see at the bottom of Yud Aleph Omid Beis, we have a Mivneh heading opposite the area that corresponds to the end of the Gemara in the margin. Mivneh with a diamond that's featured. You can see we've written Nisyonos Lifshot HaSheila. The Gemara will then present attempts to resolve the question. E Bosri Koroi Oi Soifo. Do we compare the Chulin meat to the shlomim in its original state of prohibition, or besofa, or its end? Now, for those who are learning the Daf Yomi, learning the Daf Gemara with the Meforshim, you'll note, just by even scanning ahead with the markings, that a number of Tanaic sources are going to be presented to resolve this question. We pointed out already that this is a question that keeps the Gemara occupied till Daf Yud Gimel Omid Aleph. The Meforshim, and as we've pointed out already since the beginning of the Masechta, on the Daf alone you have four different Meforshim that deal basically with the Pshat in the Gemara, with the simple explanation, Rashi, Ran, Tosfos, and the Rosh. In many of these instances, you will see opposite interpretations. This is a point that makes the learning of Masechus Nedarim a little bit more challenging than other Masechtas. The variety and varied approaches to offering explanations to the simple understanding of the Gemara. With all that in mind, we continue now. Omar Rava Toshma Noisar. The next word, there are those that don't include it in the Girsa, and there's good reason for excluding it. Noisar is meat of a korban that was not eaten within the time frame that is allocated for its consumption. And we have seen that if a person, we saw in our Mishnah, if a person uses this expression in the context of a vow, so the vow takes hold and the result is osur. The Gemara continues at the top of Yud Beis Omid Aleph. V'ha noisar, and again we're skipping the next word, where there are those that are not goreset. L'achar zrikas domim hu. What is noser? Noser is korban meat that was processed according to the law. The blood was sprinkled, but you simply didn't eat it on time. It was simply left beyond its time. It left over. Now, noser is l'achar zrikas domim, and the Mishnah said that the vow takes hold. Now, here you have a Rashi explaining that, well, from here we see that a person is matbis in its current state, and you have the Ran concluding that you see from here that the person is matbis in its original state. Whichever way your Gores the Gemara, there is an attempt then to conclude the question from the issue of the Nosar. According to the Rashi's Pshat, after Zrikas Domim, so it reached, the meat had become mutter. So then why is it that the vow is taking hold? Why is the item compared to the Noser being prohibited? Because of its comparison to Noser, which right now, even though we're talking about a case of after Zrikas Domen, but right now it is forbidden to eat the Noser. Omar le Rav Huna braid Rav Nosson. Rav Huna's response to this conclusion, or his rejection of the conclusion, is simply to say that the case of Noser that's featured is Benoser Shel Oila. A Korban Ola is a Korban that before the blood sprinkling and after the blood sprinkling, it is Oser. There is no difference between the Ikoro, the original status, and the current status. So that you can't conclude anything from the Mishnah's citation of Nosar as resulting in an effective vow. Omar le, im kain, lisni kibisar ola. Well, if that's the pshat in the Mishnah, that Nosar is really a reference to Nosar of ola, an ola korban that was simply left unburnt, which is the procedure that is appropriate for a korban ola. It's called a burnt offering, but it wasn't burnt on time. If that's the point of the Mishnah in referring to Nosar, then the Mishnah should have said kibisar ola, that a person formulated his vow saying that I want this item to be like kibisar ola. Why did the Mishnah use the term Nosar? Omarle, so he answers lo mibaya komar. The Mishnah is in the lo mibaya fashion. And what do we mean by that? Lo mibaya besar ola de osar. I don't have to tell you. That's an obvious thing. And if you compare something to besar ola, that the vow will take hold. Deha bekorban kamathis. You're simply comparing something to a sacrifice. And that's the paradigm vow. Nosar, it's tericha. However, the case of Nosar must be taught. Salka daito chamina, without the Mishnah telling me that Nosar, a vow using Nosar as its frame of reference, I might have thought Keiser Nosar, Keiser Pigel, that the person is comparing the item that he wants to vow on to the Torah prohibition of eating Nosar, or to the Torah prohibition of eating Pigel. Vehavile kematbis bedover ha'osar velo mitzvah. If you compare an item in formulating a vow to something that is prohibited a priori by the Torah, as opposed to something upon which you impose the restriction, Something like that does not constitute the basis of a vow. Komash Malon, by the Mishnah teaching Nosar, we're telling you that the person's intention isn't to compare the item upon which he is making the vow to the prohibition of Nosar, but rather to sacrificial meat that became Nosar. And sacrificial meat is something that is legitimate as serving as the basis of a vow. And hence the Mishnah rules that if you say Kenosar, it's also the vow takes hold. Mesvei. We have a long point over here. Gemara cites a Tanaic source. Ezu Isar Ha'omur B'Torah. The Brisa here, this Tanaic source is based on a posuk that says Lesor Isar B'Nafshai. So what is Isar? The word Isar is associated with the word prohibited, Osar. So what is the Isar that the Torah is referring to? Rashi, toward the end of the narrow line, says, Ezu Isar Amu B'Torah, Dichtiv L'chol Shvuas Isar. I mistakenly referred to a different posuk, but that's the posuk that the Rashi quotes. And Rashi points out that from L'chol Shvuas Isar, D'mashma She'ei Noder B'Dover Sh'Nesar B'Kach. It implies that your neder has to be something that became Osir. You are vowing, you're comparing something to another item that had become prohibited. So the Gemara continues. What is the intent of the Torah when it speaks about the Isar? Omar, a person says, Hareini shelo ochal bosar v'shelo eshte yayin kiyoyim shemeis bo aviv kiyoyim shemeis bo rabo Kiyoyim Shinerag Boy Gedalia Ben Achikom, Kiyoyim Shiroisi Yerushalayim B'Churbono. Person accepts as a vow not to eat meat nor to drink wine as the day that his father died, or the day that his rabbi died, or the day that Gedalia died, or the day that he saw Jerusalem in ruins. V'Omar Shmuel, V'hu Shenodur Ba'oso Hayom. And Shmuel comments that in order for the vow to take hold, the person would have had to accept it upon himself, a meat-eating prohibition on that particular day that he is referring to. So if we keep to the first example, Kiyom Shemeis Bo Aviv, that on the day that his father died, he had accepted upon himself as a vow not to eat meat that day. And now, at some point in time later, he is saying that he is not going to eat meat like on the day that his father died. Hey, Fidomi, what are the details, the circumstances? Lav kegoin, is it not so? Dekoi b'chad b'shaba, the misbe'avua, he's standing on a Sunday, which happens to be the same day of the week that his father died. However, his father died some time ago. V'afagav de'iko tuvo chad b'shabo de'hetera. And there were many, chad b'shabo means Sundays, of non-eat meaning prohibition, of heter. V'kotoni osur. And the source says that when a person says, I want today to be like the day that father died, the vow takes hold. Shmamina, be'ikr, hu, matpis. This shows us that when he's making reference to something that has, let's say, a time element to it, he's referring to the early time, that first Sunday. So that at this point, then, we would have a say, a resolution to the question. Our question had been, does he matpis b'de'ikar, or does he matpis b'de'hashta? Here we see he's matpis k'de'ikar. The Gemara now is doche. It rejects this method of conclusion. De Shmuel hochi itmar. As far as Shmuel's interpretation of the source, it rather is thusly. Omar Shmuel, and that's why we've noted this as Beis, the second version of Shmuel. Fahu shenodur ubo me'oisoi hayoim ve'elech. The circumstances in the source of his having accepted upon himself a meat restriction, comparing it to the day that his father died, every Sunday since his father died, he had not eaten meat. He had restricted himself from eating meat. So that there is no time difference or time reference to an earlier time versus a later time. From the earlier point, from the earliest point in time onwards, he's observed this restriction. Omar Avina Toshma. We continue with our third attempt to resolve the question concerning the Basar Shlomim, and he's saying Ze Kozeh Kechalas Aron Uketrumosoi Mutter. If a person compares something to the challah tithe. The challah tithe is a tithe removed from one's dough. Aaron is a reference to the kohanim. We give a dough tithe to kohanim, and trumaso is the standard truma tithe that we give to kohanim. Comparing an item to them, those are not things that are prohibited through vow. So mutter, the vow does not take hold. However, we infer, we are medayik, ha ketrumas lachmei toida aser. However, if a person compares an item to the tithe separated from the loaves that are brought with a thanks offering, toda is a korban toda, along with the sheep that one brings as a korban toda, he brings 40 loaves. From the 40 loaves, which are broken down into four groups of 10, four different types of baked items that constitute the Korban Todah bread aspect. 10%, that's four of the 40 loaves, are separated and given to the Kohen. So we infer from the source that we read that if you compared something to the Trumas Lachmei Todah, Usher, that vow would be binding. V'ha trumas lachmei toida li'achar zrikas domim hi. We've continued at the top of Yud Beis Amud Beis. The point in time where a person separates the tithe of the lachmei toida, that's after the blood of the sheep animal sacrifice, animal aspect of the Todah sacrifice was already sprinkled. So you're dealing with something that is after the Zrikas Domim, and yet the vow takes hold. As far as how to interpret this, there's quite a bit of commentary activity. Rashi has two opposite approaches. The Ran has an approach that is similar to the second interpretation you found in the Rashi. And from here, the fact that the neder, that the vow takes hold, is indicative of his comparing the item to the sacrifice in its original state. And that's what the Ran says on the third line from the top. Umitoni osur shmamino de beikoron komathis. The Gemara rejects this. You can see we have a house shape on the side under our mivneh heading. We have shtei gishois, two approaches. Lama ein lahasik maskona me'amokur kechalas aron. Why can we really not draw any conclusions from the source of Kechalas Aaron Kutrumaso, from which we drew our inference. Ema Kitrumas Halishka Aser, instead of saying that we'll infer Trumas Lachmei Tolda as being a basis for creating a nether, and in that case we can analyze it in terms of before the blood sprinkling and after the blood sprinkling, rather infer from the source Kachalas Aron Trumaso that if you would have made a netter comparing something to like Trumas Halishka is the money that's donated to the temple treasury. Those monies are always usher. There isn't any before and after aspect to it. Once you dedicate the money, once you make a netter to bring the money to the base of English, the money becomes usher. Okay. Well, with that having been said, then what are we left to think about Trumas Lachmei Todah? You're telling me now that when will a vow take hold and you want to compare it to some aspect of Truma, it will be a vow if you compare it to Trumas Halishka, to the monies that are donated to the temple treasury. But Aval, Trumas Lachmei Todah Mai, what about comparing an item to that which we suggested before, the Trumas Lachmei Todah? Mutter, are you going to say, you'll then conclude, well, there the vow won't take hold. If that's the case, listen, Trumas Lachmei Todah, for Kol Shekein Trumaso. The Mishnah, the Tanaic source that we saw quoted, the Mishnah was quoted on the second line from the bottom of Omid Aleph, instead of featuring Kechal Asaron Trumaso, it should have featured Kechal. It could have said Kechal Asaronu Ketrumas Lachmei Todah. The vow would be mutter, and all the more so if you had compared an item to standard crop truma tithes. Now, you'll ask, why is that like all the more so that such a vow wouldn't take hold? So Rashi explains, mind you, Trumas Lachmei Todah that has a root in the realm of Nidorim, of vows where you impose the prohibition on it. And yet, the vow doesn't take hold because B'dahashto Kamatis, because you're looking at it as it is right now in its post Zrikas Dam Mutter state, truma of tithes, that's not even something that's considered a Dover HaNodr to begin with. It's even less capable of being the basis of a vow formulation. So why did the source bother teaching about the ineffectiveness of a vow when you compare it to crop tithes? The Gemara continues, Hoko mashmolon, Trumas Lachmei Todah, Trumaso he. In other words, everything we said till now is correct. When the source mentioned Ketrumaso, it's including in that the Trumas Lachmei Todah as being something that that could not serve as the basis for a vow. The Imboya Sema Trumas Lachmei Todah Nami Kedem Zrikas Domim Hu. Another approach is that even within the case of the Trumas Lachmei Todah, we're not dealing with a before and after situation, before Zrikas Dam and after Zrikas Dam, because the Trumas Lachmei Todah, according to the Iboy Hasema, according to the second approach, is a reference to Trumas Lachmei Todah that was tithed, that was separated before the blood of the actual korban was sprinkled. And as a result of that, it's not something that has that we have a choice in. Are we comparing it to before the Zrikas Hadam or after the Zrikas Dam, because the very basic Trumas Lachmei Toda, according to this approach, was Trumas Lachmei Toda that was separated before the Korban's blood was sprinkled. The Ran elaborates on this a bit more. On the upper part of the narrow lines, you see Trumas Lachmei Toda Nami Lefnei Zrikas Dam, and Klomar. The Mishkachas law, you can actually have a case to nisrimu that the 10% of the total loaves were separated before kodem zrikas dam mishmachi lo psika leila misni ketrumas lachmei toda, and therefore it didn't want to teach the case of trumas lachmei toda. The ikar gavno the mitzar kishe nisrimu kodem zrikas damim. Because there is a case that the Trumas Lachmei Toda themselves would be prohibited, as would be the case if they were tithed before the blood of the basic korban was sprinkled. The basic korban was the sheep that constitutes the korban toida. Now, how is it that you would have the Trumas Lachmei Toda separated so early, even before the Zrikas Domim? Kegoin dafrishinu belisha. An example of that would be where he separated it while it was still in its dough state. You notice that we have a bracketed section, and you can use the bracket length indicator. You can see it's rather long brackets. On the side, we have a starred note that reads, "Hasogram einon l'shem dilug." These brackets are not really for skipping purposes. Elo laharos she'ikar atshuva staimo, that the basic response ended. The whole mashe besoch hasogram hu divrei reka. Everything within the brackets is background information. And it's divrei reka lahafrosha belisha, to explain or elaborate on this point of tithing while still in its dough state, not after it's been baked into 40 loaves. Ube'etzem ma'avenekuda arukan. Basically, we have a long point that ahead of us in the brackets. V'chiha, we continue in the Gemara. V'chiha, diomar of tuvi ba'kisna mar Shmuel, lachmei toida she'ofon ba'arba chalois. The lachmei toda, the loaves of the toda offering that you baked in the form of four loaves, yotza, you have fulfilled your requirements. Ivoksiv Arboim, does the Torah not expect 40 loaves? The Gemara says, le mitzvah. And the Gemara also tells you how much flour to bring. So Shmuel suggests, lachmei toda, that you baked in four loaves, it's four very large loaves. It's the same quantity that would have otherwise, if you followed the Torah, would have resulted in 40 loaves. But Shmuel suggesting he could have baked the lachmei toda in four loaves. But what about the fact that the Torah says 40? That's the mitzvah. That 40 is the best way to do it. But you can still fulfill your requirement if you baked four separate loaves. The ha'boy, the mishkal truma. But how can you say four loaves is enough? Don't you have to remove truma from it? That's 10% of whatever you baked. V'chitema d'shokil chado rifta akula. And you might say, well, he'll take one of the loaves to cover all the others and give that to the kayin. V'atanan. But to take one of the four loaves, and we didn't emphasize this before, but we did on a previous occasion, the lachmei toda are four different kinds of baked items. There's matzah, there's challah, rekikim, and revucha. There are four different kinds or different qualities or kinds of baking that constitute the lachmei toda. So this suggestion of having baked it in four loaves, and you'll remove one loaf as the truma, that doesn't work though. And that's what the Gemara goes to explain here. Vatnan, we have a source that says Echad Mikol Korban, and from this we learn Shelo Yitol Me Korban Al Chaviro. You can't take one loaf and expect it to exempt the other loaves from the necessary tithe. So that if you took the, we'll call the matzah type loaf to exempt the revucha, that just doesn't work. You might say that, well, he makes his original challah off, the, you'll say, korban toda loaves in four loaves, and he'll remove a piece, he'll slice off 10% from each loaf. That's the shokel prusa mikol chad v'chad. That can't be done either. Echod, that's what the Torah says. Shelo yitol prusa. From the word echod, we learn that you're not supposed to remove a piece of the of any toda loaf to give to the kohen as his tithe. Elo dafreshinu belisha. What happened is he formed, let's say, four loaves, and maybe even before forming the loaves, he just had four, let's say, large clumps of dough. He removed 10% while still in its kneaded state. That's belisha. And in actual terms, the shokil chado me chometz, v'chado min chalos, v'chado min rekikim, v'chado min revucha. We take one clump of dough, let's just go over the last, I think we have to just explain with greater clarity the last objection before we get to the Lisha, is that from the fact that the Torah says Echad, Votan Echad Shelo Yitol Prusa, that you can't take a slice, you can't bake four loaves and take a slice from each one of the different four qualities. That's not in conformity to the Torah's expectation. You have to, that which you are going to eventually give to the Kohen as your toda challah tithe, it has to be complete loaves. So we still maintain Rav Tuvi's teaching that you're going to bake four large loaves, but while the four large loaves were still in their kneading or in their dough state, you separated 10% of each one, and that small quantity of dough would be baked and given to the Kohen. That's what the Gemara is saying here. El Zavashina Belisha, the Shokil Chado Mechomes, Vechado Min Chalos, Vechado Min Rekikim, Vechado Min Revucha. Those are the names of the four different kinds of loaves that constitute the Lachmei Toda. Leimo Ketanoi, should we say that the issue of Bosri Koro or Bosri Hashto is a Machlokes Tanoim? The Gemara is suggesting that what the issue that we're, let's say, in doubt about, when you have the Bosri Shlomim after Zrikas Dam and your own common meat next to it, and you say Zeh Kozeh, one approach was to say you go according to the Shlomim in its before Zrikas Dam state, when it would be also in the Neder would take hold. The other Adeya says, no, you're comparing it to the current state of the Shlomim after the Zrikas Dam. Could it be suggested that this is a Machlokes Tanoim? You'll see now a long question that takes you to the second line from the top of Daf Yud Gimel Omid Aleph, with all of this being part of the suggestion. The source says, Hare Olai Kibachor. I accept upon myself some item to be like a Bechor. Bechor is a reference to a firstborn kosher variety animal that when it is born, one is to give it to a Kohen. And in the time of the Beis Hamikdash, it would be brought as a sacrifice. So a person says, I am accepting something upon myself to be like Bechor. Rabbi Yankiv Oser, Rabbi Yudah Matir. Rabbi Yankiv says the vow takes hold, and Rabbi Yudah says it doesn't. Hechi Domi, what are the circumstances? Inemo. Lifnei Zrikas Domim, if it's he's saying that I want to accept upon myself this item, like Bechor, before its blood is sprinkled. If that's what the Tanaic source was talking about, then my taimo daman deshori. What would be the explanation for Rav Yehuda who says that the neder doesn't take hold if you're comparing it to a sacrifice before the blood sprinkling, but it's clearly being compared to something that's aser. If you're comparing the item that you want to impose upon it a vow restriction to the, you're comparing it to the Bechor after the blood is sprinkled, so my time of demand osar. Why would anyone say that the neder takes hold? So that's not the case. That's not what this source is talking about. It'd be namely Hare Alai Kebechor Lefnei Zrikas Domim. Ela Lav. I don't think I explained with full clarity, just the second to last line, V'ilachar Zrikas Domim, that means, and if he would say, I'm accepting upon myself that this loaf should be like Bechor, and he spells out, Bechor after the blood is sprinkled, so why would someone say that the neder takes hold after the blood is sprinkled, so the Kohen is entitled to eat the Bechor? So Elo Lav, it must be the Mochis, we're at the top of Yud Gimel Amud Aleph, the Mochis Besar Bechor Kameh, there is lying next to him some Bechor meat, Umochis Besar Dehech Gabe, and some common meat is also lying there, and the Bechor meat that's lying there is Bechor, firstborn male animal meat, after this Zrikas Adam, and the Omar Zeh Kozeh, and the vow taker says, the vow maker says, I want this to be like that. And what do we see when you do that? V'tanoihi, it turns out to be a machlokas tanoim. Lo, de kuli almo lefnei zrikas domim. The case really is harei alai kibachor, I'm accepting a vow of a restriction comparing some item, some meat to the Bechor before the blood is sprinkled. Well, my time of demand is shori. If you're compared to before the time the blood is sprinkled, no one can participate in such a korban. So why would someone say that the neder doesn't take hold? Omar kro kidor achiyodor bedavar hanodor afuke Bechor tedavar haoserhu. When you make a vow, you have to compare the item of the vow, the subject of the vow, to something that you made osur through a vow. Bechor is not something that you made osur through a vow. A Bechor is born as a firstborn. It's born as a prohibited item. Uman de osur, Omar Kro, and he who says that it's a good vow, the Pasuk says, Lashem, le rabbis, Dover Ha'osir, according to this approach, even comparing the item to something that is a priori osir, namely without your having made it osir, nevertheless it does serve as a model or a basis for a vow. Uman Dishori Lashem Ayovidle, and the opinion that says that by comparing something to a Bechor, the vow would be mutter, shori, means it's mutter, it doesn't take hold. So what does he do with the Lashem that we just darshened? Answer, miboyalei lematbis b'chatzis Lashem. He needs that to tell me, if I make a vow and using a sin offering or guilt offering as my model, it's a good, it's an effective vow. Oma royes l'rabbis chatzis Lashem l'osias v'chor. What is it that motivated you to include a chatas and oshem, even though those are not standard sacrifices in the sense that there are sacrifices that don't come voluntarily, but nevertheless you're saying if you parallel your vow item to a chatas and oshem, it takes hold, and why is it that you feel to exclude the Bechor as serving as a model or the basis of a vow? The Gemara answers, Marbani Chatas V'Oshem, I'm willing to include Chatas V'Oshem as being able to serve as the basis of a vow, shehu matbis beneder. When you made the sin offering into a sin offering, how did you make it into a sin offering? By designating it. It was a mutter animal that you now designated, making it osur, making it into a sacrifice. So the chadas and osham are examples of something that could serve as the basis of a vow insofar as it's something you made osur. However, I will exclude the bechor, which is something that you didn't make osur at all. It's chadosh, it's sanctified from the mother animal's womb. It's its firstborn. Uman di osar, and according to the opinion that says that comparing it to the bechor does take hold, bechor nami matpisa benederhu. Believe it or not, he will tell you that bechor is something also that you are that became usher, so to speak, not literally, but it is something that also you impose an iser on. What do we mean by that? Did we not say it's sanctified from birth? What does it mean that you imposed a sanctity to it? Tesanya mishum Rebbe Amru minayin lenolad bechor b'soch beisu shemitzvah la'akdisha. For do we know that if a firstborn animal is born amongst your possessions, that you have to, that it's a mitzvah, it's a proper thing to sanctify it as a bechor. Shenemar hazochor takdish. So, therefore, the in the Tanaic source that we saw earlier, if a person says harei ze alai kebechor lefnei zrikas domim, I am comparing the item of the vow to something that itself I imposed upon it sanctity. Uman deshari, and according to the opinion that says that comparing it to the bechor is ineffective, the vow does not take hold. Ki lo makdish le, mi lo makdish. And if he wouldn't have sanctified it, would it not have become sanctified? It would have been sanctified anyway. So it's not an example of something that you made usher. Before we conclude, let us remind you that if you wish to be in touch with us in order to access marked Gemaras, we can be reached at gmarkings@gmail.com. With that, we conclude our shiur for today.